The Mike Dolce Show.
Cause you can,
you won't,
and you don't stop. Cause you can,
you won't,
and you don't stop. Or when you can,
you won't,
and you don't stop. Mike
D coming back. Welcome to the Mike Dolce Show, episode number 5. Boom. Glad to be back. Speaking of getting back, I'm just getting back from Brazil. What was I doing in Brazil? In Sao Paulo, Brazil? I was with Vitor the Phenom Belfort and Nick the Carney Lentz standing by their side as they had impressive career-defining performances. Vitor won the main event by head kick knockout to very tough Michael Bisping. Dana had said before the fight, Bisping would get the title shot at Anderson Silva if he beat Vitor Belfort. Shows you what a high-caliber athlete Bisping was, and Vitor was able to go out there and take him out in under 2 rounds. So great job, Vitor. And Nick Lentz, I mean, he might have been the breakout athlete of the show. Nick Lentz went out there, and he beat number 7-ranked featherweight Diego Nunes. Nick did not only beat Nunes, Nick beat Nunes down like he'd never been beat up before in his career. I said Nunes is a number 7 welter or featherweight. That's a freaking tough guy. There's only 6 guys ahead of him in line to be the absolute best fighter in the world. And Nick beat this man up like nobody had ever seen before. Moving on. We're going to jump right in to our Q&As from the Facebook page. You guys know I couldn't really do my Sunday Q&A yesterday on Twitter at the Dolce Diet like I normally do because I was flying home from Brazil. 14-hour, 15-hour flight door to door. And that was excessive. The plane took off 11:30 at night and I landed Vegas time about 9 a.m. I'm flying back in time 6 hours. So that's a long day. And I did actually, I probably got about 50 responses off on the Twitter page. But I told you guys today, if you posted your questions on the Facebook page, The Dolce Diet, I would do my best to answer them. And I'm going to do that right now. You ready, Brandy?
I am so ready.
Question number one.
Question number one comes from Scott Reynolds. Mike, in terms of gym time, what's the best approach to train for strength on the core lift and for endurance on everything else?
Scott, what's up, buddy? So, training for strength, you can probably see that I'm there. Anytime I talk about deadlifts. People ask me how to, you know, run faster, it's deadlifts. How to get stronger, it's deadlifts. How to, you know, have a nice tight butt, it's deadlifts. Deadlift, to me, is the number one exercise every human should be doing. Elite athlete, amateur golfer, you know, or just, you know, regular layperson getting through the day. Everybody should deadlift. Now, let me look at your question a little bit deeper in terms of gym time. What's the best approach to train for strength, core lifts? So seeing this question a little deeper, now you want to know time and frequency. What I would suggest to you is do a deadlift-based, lower body-based, posterior chain-based, hip-centric-based training on Monday when you're strongest in the week, something that really activates the most muscles of your body but also your central nervous system. This way, you can get the biggest bang for your buck when you're at your most rested and strongest. This leads to more efficient training. So you have a nice heavy deadlift workout on Monday and plan something a little lighter touching that same area on Thursday. You might want to do some sort of modified deadlift, single leg deadlift, use a different implement like a barbell or a dumbbell or bands or kettlebells or sandbags on Thursday, a little higher reps. On Monday, let me take you back, train a little heavier. 3 rep sets, 5 rep sets, 8 rep sets, depending on your skill level and your comfortability. On Thursday, go a little bit higher. You know, 15, you know, 12 reps, 15 reps, or, you know, 20 to 50 reps, no problem, and get more specific on technical aspects. Still, you'll be activating the nervous system, but you're not going to be crushing the body and shutting it down. Tuesday and Friday, do something for other parts of your body, a little more of the showy parts of your body. Chest, shoulders, abs, you know, a lot of, you know, targeted core work, you know, arms, maybe, you know, gymnastics training, something a little more specialized if we're just talking about getting stronger for, and you're talking endurance. For endurance, just that those, you build the base strength on Monday and Thursday, like I said, the higher rep day, the more precise day, you train for more for muscular endurance or what we call time under tension. So Monday, it's really boom, explosive lifts. And on Thursday, it's more keeping those muscles under a specific type of tension for a specific type of time. Now, it can be fast. It can be slow. It can be isometric where you just hold it in one single spot. But you're working the muscles for a longer period of time. You're going to develop multiple types of strength that way. And Tuesday and Friday, pick areas that you want to build up. Maybe you want nicer arms, you know, a rounder pecs, tighter, stronger abs, something along those lines, if it's more cosmetic based. Now, if you're an athlete, then you work on, you know, very specific types of training. Maybe it's more mobility, agility work, reactive work on those days, or trouble areas, or rehab, prehab, you could put on those days. That's a good start. And then Wednesday and Saturday, and for everybody, so Scott's question here, it really covers everybody. I'm trying to give a general explanation of what everybody can do regardless of your goals. Here's a good frame or an outline. And that Wednesday and Saturday, that would be less intensity on Wednesday and high but very short intensity on Saturday. Saturday, I would say go out and do some interval sprints. Now, you can do those road work. You can do those on a bike. You can do those swimming laps. I mean, you can do those like Tabata squats in your hotel room or your bedroom. And on Wednesday, I would take Wednesday down just a little bit. You know, maybe that's your active rest day where you go for – you know, take the family and the kids, the dogs for a walk around the neighborhood, go play basketball with your buddies, you know, ballet class, maybe some yoga, things like that. And then Sunday, I always try and take that day off, suggest that be off. So hopefully, Scott, that tells you what type of gym time, which is training time, and the best exercises. Hopefully I broke that down for you. Give me another one.
All right. This is from Mike D'Onofrio. Mike, I'm a vegetarian, been on Living Lean for 6 months, and have dropped 40 pounds.
Boom.
Just wondering what your thoughts on stevia are and what your thoughts on tofu or any other soy products are.
Mike, what's up, buddy? My vegetarian friend, and thank you. People don't know initially, you don't know until you know, that the Dolce diet, you can be vegetarian, you can certainly be vegan. What my principles are, the way they're outlined, you can really have any type of approach to diet, whether you're a vegetarian possibly because of health issues, you have digestive problems, it could be because of regional or cultural issues, you just don't have access to certain types or most animal-based products. It could be ecological, it could be ideological, you know, all these reasons, you know, for our preferences. Doesn't matter what your reason is, you can still follow the Dolce diet because what I do, I break it down. The program is broken down. I'm getting off your topic just a little bit here, Mike, but I want to kind of give an explanation. The Dolce diet, the principles, eat earth-grown nutrients at even intervals until you're satisfied, not until you're full. I mean, those three principles right there, it's a very general guide to what I'm talking about, and anybody can do that. Vegetarian, vegan, pescatarian, you know, what I call the carnivores, the paleo-type people. You know, if you follow those core principles, then you can do anything. So a vegetarian you are, Mike, and you lost 40 pounds following the Dolce diet. Well, what a great testament that is to the ability. Now, Vitor Belfort, well, he's a steak eater. He's a meat eater. You know, he's certainly a carnivore, and he has tremendous success also. So, you know, put that out there. Now, you're wondering what my thoughts on stevia are and what are my thoughts on tofu. Well, stevia, it's a natural sweetener, so it would be approved. But I think it tastes gross, so I don't suggest stevia. I don't use stevia. I have a box of it in my house. I used it one time, and it was absolutely ruined the natural flavor of foods. I'm an advocate of the natural flavors, unleash the natural flavors of foods, which is why the recipes that I come up with, they blend the natural flavors together, so it tastes – everything tastes gourmet, but you can taste the true nature of the food. And stevia, I think, really throws that off. You need a little boost, something different. Some people like it. They talk about it. I'm not a fan of it. And make sure if you do use it, it's absolutely, you know, 100% all natural, raw, you know, is best, the stevia leaf. And what are my thoughts on tofu or any other soy product? I'm not a fan of soy products. They talk about soy products increasing men's estrogen production. They talk about, you know, soy having issues, you know, with females. You know, too much soy can be problems for women. Soy has been linked to what guys call bitch tits, or it's called gynecomastia, which is the increase in female breast tissue in men. That's been talked about. Now, whether or not that stuff is true, there's you know, reports going either way, but most of you probably understand or have heard what I'm talking about. My dislike for soy is that it's primarily genetically modified. So if we're talking about soy as has evolved on the planet since the dawn of time, I would be much more prone to use that, but I can't find it. 95% of soy in the United States is genetically modified. The odds on me finding non-GMO soy is negligible. You don't come across it too often. I'm not really looking for it, but I'm in the healthier spots, you know, in the world constantly, and I don't see it too often. You know, a little edamame here or there, that's a soy product, you know, not so bad. Now, should you have a soy product over a meat product or an animal product? again, you know, if I can get the animal wild, or get GMO soy, I'm going to go with the wild animal, even if I do want to live more of a vegan or a vegetarian lifestyle, just because it's the quality of the nutrients. There's no alteration of the you know, the genetic structure, which I believe GMO products they can have a negative impact. And I think there's a high probability that there's a negative impact along with equal impact of nutrients. So a GMO broccoli has a certain amount of vitamin C in it, let's say, but also it's been genetically modified, so it's going to bring with that equal amount of vitamin C, it's going to bring something else. Is it going to be good or is it going to be bad? Oh, I don't think it's good. You know, there's a lot of reports out there that link excessive GMO products to certain type of less than desirable adaptations in – they don't test it in humans, but it's tested in rats and other animals. And then, you know, profoundly thinking or speaking, you know, there's just something naturally wrong with GMO products being consumed and being integrated into the human body. So that's that, and those are part of the Dolce diet principles, you know, earth-grown nutrients. That is not GMO. GMO is lab-made, even, you know, lab-made, and then it's planted into the ground. So that's not considered earth-grown. And that's different than organic, because organic, you can have organic GMO products. Now, was that, you know, so that would be the broccoli. Broccoli was, you know, chemically enhanced or altered in a lab. You know, the seed was created. It was grown under GMO or organic practices. So nothing was added to it, no pesticides, and, you know, the type of soil and the way it was preserved, you know, was shipped to you totally organically. Well, that can be a GMO product. So hopefully that helps you.
All right. This one is from Esteban Baker. Are you helping Christiane Cyborg get down to 135 pounds? And if so, how long do you think it's going to take with you helping her?
Yes, that is the plan. That's the intention for me to work with Chris Cyborg. That's been a news story out there for a little while. It's about Chris versus Ronda. That's obviously the biggest female fight in the history of women's MMA. Now, will that fight happen? It's been a conversation because Chris Cyborg competes and holds the Strikeforce, or held the Strikeforce world title at 145 pounds. Ronda holds the 135-pound UFC. She's the first ever UFC 135-pound female champion. So the question was, what weight class would this be at? Now, Chris Cyborg has never competed at 135. And that's a question. That's a concern. Now, at 145, Chris Cyborg is in very good shape. I mean, she's ripped. She is the epitome of what a professional athlete should look like, regardless of gender. What weight should it be? So Cyborg and her camp didn't feel that she could make weight, and they wanted it to be at 145. But unfortunately, the only spot to fight in the UFC is at 135 pounds. There is no 145-pound division in the UFC. But also, there's no Ronda Rousey at 145 pounds. Ronda holds the 135-pound belt, and that's where the fight is going to have to be if it happens. So my name was brought up by Dana White and from Cyborg's team that – if Chris Cyborg does sign with the UFC, and if she does agree to face Ronda Rousey, she wanted me to be a part of her team, that they felt that I would give her the best opportunity to make the weight in a healthy fashion, and the UFC felt that I would be the person best able to make this fight happen so the fans can see what they want and everybody will be healthy. The UFC only wants healthy athletes in their octagon, and it was, you know, it was an honor when Dana White chose me as the person, or agreed for me to be the person, because there was part of the contract. You know, I don't know the specifics of it, quite honestly, but there's part of the contract, part of the deal is me helping Chris Cyborg. But Chris is on vacation, and I just got back from Vitor Belfort and Nick Lentz in Brazil, and we'll see how it goes. So I don't know how, you know, I'm not the management. I don't get involved in any of that. I'm not the promoter. I don't get involved in any of that. My only role, my only job is to keep the athlete healthy and give that, which gives them the best opportunity to compete at their highest possible level. So if Chris Cyborg is interested in me helping to keep her healthy, then I'm certainly interested in working with her. But officially, there's no deal. There's no plan right now. We haven't started working together, is what I should say. But don't be surprised if tomorrow I come on and say that we are working together. And she's a great person too. I actually sat down with her, and you know, we had a nice lunch 2 months ago when this conversation first happened. It first came up, And I'd be happy to help her. She's a great person. She's, you know, very nice. She's a sweetheart. And she's an elite athlete. She's one of the greatest athletes in the world, regardless of sport, regardless of gender. I mean, she's genetically and, you know, just superb. You know, she's world class. So why wouldn't I want to work with Chris?
All right. Next question is from Lance Holly. Hey, Mike, first things first, I'm 22 pounds down on the diet. Thank you very much.
Boom.
I've been hitting the gym pretty hard the past couple of weeks, but don't seem to be losing much weight anymore. He runs and walks 3.2 miles, then bikes 12.4 miles every other day. He and his buddy are going to try a triathlon, it looks like, this summer. Any suggestions to help me off this plateau? I can't seem to break 250 pounds.
Yes. Lance, what's up? First, 22 pounds down. That is awesome. Very excited about that. Next, give it time, buddy. Enjoy the fact that you lost 22 pounds. I don't know how long it took. Did it take a month or did it take 2 years to lose the 22 pounds? But first and foremost, be proud of the 22 pounds. Recognize the huge accomplishment 22 pounds is. 22 pounds of weight loss. That is amazing. So you're well on your way, but the gains aren't coming as fast as you would like or as fast as they had in the beginning, because in the beginning, the gains always come fast. When you make a dramatic lifestyle change, you see dramatic improvement right away. The improvement continues. It keeps going, but it just doesn't stay on that same arc, that same peak, that same level. Keep it up. Keep going. Now, looking at your training program, you seem to be talking about cardiovascular exercise. Oftentimes, the need is not to increase your cardiovascular exercise, but it could be to increase your resistance exercise or your hypertrophy exercises or your muscle gain. That's basically what those three terms mean. Increase your lean muscle mass. When you increase your lean muscle mass, that muscle is going to use additional body fat to fuel it. So that way, you gain lean mass, functional weight, and you lose body fat or non-functional weight. So your body fat drops, your ability, your utility increases and goes up. But you're 250 pounds now. If you gain 5 pounds of muscle and lose 5 pounds of body fat, you're going to still be 250 pounds, but your body fat percentage will drop. Now, if you gain 5 more pounds and lose 5 more pounds, 5 more pounds of muscle, lose 5 more pounds of body fat, then your body fat percentage will drop again, though your weight will stay exactly the same. And that's really what we want to do. Obviously, you're not going to stay at 250 pounds and be 5% body fat unless you're doing the wrong things, unhealthy things that I certainly wouldn't suggest. But that's the concept. So think about, keep your cardiovascular up. If you want to bump it up a little bit, feel free, whether the intensity or the volume. Maybe you alternate the intensity and the volume. So for a three-week period, you do your three-mile walk at 30 minutes and then your 12.5-mile cycle in 45 minutes. And then you try and do that same pace faster, or you do a shorter pace, a little longer. You change up the volume and the intensity, and you hit the resistance training. Now, I answered earlier, I forget the gentleman's name, a question about resistance training. Think about implementing that same schedule, you know, where you go heavy, lower body centric movements, deadlifts and squats and things like that, Monday and Thursday, and more of the show muscles or the fun muscles, chest, shoulders, arms, abs, Tuesday and Thursday. And maybe you do your intervals, maybe you do you're walking on a Wednesday and you're cycling on a Saturday. That would be another great program for you. And I say this so everybody can listen, that now we can fit Lance's goals also with that very same basic template. That's what I would suggest. But I it's hard because I don't know your full situation. Diet, of course. Are you following the Dolce diet? Are you following Living Lean? Maybe you want to jump onto the three-week shredded program and really, boom, get your weight down and then transfer back to the Living Lean program and maintain that weight and keep adding, you know, pound of muscle, losing a pound of body fat. That's the general goal. That's the what you should visualize or attempt to do. So hopefully it helps. Give me one more.
All right, Daniel Deepan Aldred said, can you make the podcast longer?
Yes, Daniel. Actually, this podcast will be our longest podcast to date because there's so many damn questions on here. And I'm not going to get to all the questions, unfortunately, today, but I'm going to get to a whole shitload of them. And, you know, this podcast, we're probably easily going to go over an hour. I don't think we've gone past 45 minutes before. We'll go over an hour today easily. Who knows? Maybe 2 hours. But I'm just going to keep answering questions. And I get long-winded. So if you guys listening, I get long-winded sometimes, and I go off on tangents, and I kind of go sideways, but I'm trying to be more – I'm trying to explain more. So I might kind of contort your questions just a little bit, but it's because I'm trying to share more information or give you some reasons behind my answers, kind of fill in the blanks of my thought process, because what I do and what I say might be different than a scientific report that you're reading right now, or what your wrestling coach told you to do in high school, or what the trainer at the gym says. You know, they have a one way, which may be good or bad, but I'm telling you my way, and I'm trying to give you a little explanation as to why, so you can make an informed decision. Does this make sense for me? Can I do that? You know, maybe, you know, let me Google that. Let me find out a little bit more about that. So I'm trying to kind of, you know, help coach you guys along also with some of these answers. But see, I'm getting long-winded again. I'm going sideways. I'm being descriptive. I'm trying to explain a little bit more. I think that's just the coach in me. You know, my whole life, that's what I've been doing, helping people understand my psychosis. Give me another question.
This is from Jeff Hollingsworth. Hey, Mike, just got your books. What do you think about wild game meat like deer, duck, rabbit? And I love the podcast.
Thank you very much. Now, what do I think about wild game? I think that's freaking awesome. I wish that's all we could eat. I wish that you walk into a supermarket and there would be wild game right there waiting for you. You know, hopefully it wouldn't be staring at you when you walked in, because then I would definitely be a vegan, and that's probably the best way to make us all vegans, is to make us stare at the food before we eat it. Now, there's guys out there like Johnny Hendricks, one of my friends, one of my athletes, and Johnny is a known hunter, which I really respect about Johnny, because that's how he feeds his family. He goes out and he pulls down wild game of different types, and he does it in a very professional way, a very humane way, a very strategic way, just like our ancestors did to spawn our species. Johnny goes out there and does it the same way, takes it home, and Johnny's Native American. He uses every piece of the animal. He's certainly very respectful of how he feeds his family. And the nutrition, you can't beat the nutrition of wild game. The fresh, the live, the vital nutrition that you get from that is astounding. So am I a fan of wild game? Absolutely. But I don't require it. You don't have to consume wild game to be on the Dolce diet, or, you know, to share my beliefs or philosophies. It goes back to the earth-grown nutrients, and a plant product fills that same category as a deer or an elk. Now it comes down to, some people have medical or scientific reasons to not eat one or the other, or to have a certain percentage in their diet of one or the other, which may or may not be sound, but that's certainly within the realm of correct. It could be, like I said earlier, just it could be moral. Some people can just not get past the fact of what the taking of a life, you know, just for their own consumption, and that's certainly fine also. Everybody can follow the Dolce diet. Because we focus on the earth-grown nutrients. I think that's a very important term that I've been using for a long time now, to try and really be descriptive of what foods you should be eating. And wild game, that fits that bill. But it must be humane. It must be humane.
This is from Samuel Kalari. Huge fan, Mike. I'm preparing for a fight next weekend. I'm down 175 to 155, all on the Dolce diet. My question is, what is your take on Larabars? They have all whole ingredients, kosher, non-GMO, soy-free, and vegan, good or bad?
Larabars are awesome. I actually do suggest Larabars. I have some in my backpack right now. I have some in my truck. Larabars are a product that I keep on hand because I can trust it. It's a non-GMO product, which is very important. It has very few ingredients. All of the ingredients are all natural. I mean, an ingredient would be dates, cashew, and maybe just dates and dried cherries, something like that. It's, you know, usually three or four ingredients at most. They're all natural ingredients. And they taste great. They preserve well. In Brazil, I had a whole Ziploc, a one-gallon Ziploc bag filled with Larabars. And they were, you know, sitting on the plane. There's a snack right there. You can put one in my back pocket when I'm walking around the city. I always want to make sure, again, Dolce diet principle, you eat every 2 to 4 hours based on what you just did or what you're about to do. A Larabar can help me do that sometimes on the go, on the run. But usually it's, you know, or it's just a fun snack. I want a little snack, you know, as a part of a meal. I'll use a Larabar because of the nutrients that it provides. But I don't, I'm not eating, you know, two a day, three a day, and I'm not eating one a day on most days. I usually take them for on the go type of situations. Traveling is a great one. You keep a couple in your car. You know, mom, you know, get some of the blueberry, the coconut, or the banana ones to give to your kids when they want a candy bar. Just try it out. And again, it helps keep your blood sugar nice and stable. Just that you know, little feeding. It's probably 180 calories or so. I think there's, you know, maybe 20 to 30 grams of carbohydrates in there. Some have a lot of fiber, which is really nice, and essential fats. Larabars are a good product. I make no money off. I'm giving them a good plug right here. Make no money off them, but I actually use them. I trust them with my family.
All right, this next question is from Josh Lawrence. He says 2-0. The other night, bro, that's awesome. And then his question is the revised version of 3 Weeks to Shredded going to be up on iTunes?
Josh, what's up, man? Well, thank you. 2-0 in Brazil. And, of course, you're talking about Vitor Belfort and Nick Lentz. I started off the show talking about those guys. Impressive, amazing victories. Both guys have publicly said these were the easiest weight cuts of their career. Vitor cut 4 pounds on Friday. 4 pounds. Easy. Nick Lentz cut 5 pounds. Easy. They felt great. They looked extremely healthy, which you guys can all see at the UFC weigh-ins. I think you can find it on UFC.com or Fuel TV. They look amazing at the weigh-ins, and they had amazing career-defining performances. Everyone in the media is saying that was the best Vitor Belfort they had ever seen. And everybody's saying it was the best Nick Lentz they had ever seen. Nick Lentz, of course, beat the number 7 ranked guy in the world, Diego Nunez. Vitor Belfort beat the number 1 ranked guy in the world, Michael Bisping, because Dana White said Michael Bisping was next in line to fight Anderson Silva. Number 1, number 2, number 3, Bisping was right there. I mean, that's such a fine line at that category. So 2-0, that was an awesome night. It certainly made that 14-hour flight home a heck of a lot enjoyable. I'll take that flight every Saturday night. If my guys go out and perform that, no problem. And what was the second part of the question?
Is the revised version of 3 Weeks to Shredded going to be up on iTunes?
Yes, the revised version of 3 Weeks to Shredded, which I've spoken about a few times. I don't think I brought it up here on the podcast. So 3 Weeks to Shredded is a weight cutting manual that I wrote in 2007 based off my weight cut when I fought Antonio McKee. In that time, I lost 42.8 pounds in 6 weeks. 3 Weeks to Shredded, I focus on the last 3 weeks, in which I lost 27.8 pounds. I detail exactly what I did at that time, every meal I ate, the exact ingredients, size, quantity of each, and I show the breakdown all the way through. The diet's very simple, very tasty. Most people say they can't believe, they say they look at it, it doesn't seem like a lot of food, but the way I combine the food, because I was doing this, I know the science behind it, but also the emotional impact. I don't wanna be starving. I'm Italian. I grew up. I used to be 280 pounds. So you guys know. I know most of you know. I used to be 280. You don't get 280 if you hate food. I love food. I love flavor. I love quantity. I want to feel full. But I signed to fight at 170 pounds. I signed the contract, and as a professional, I had to do my job, but I didn't have to suffer. So in 3 weeks of Shredded, I break down the meals, exactly what I did, and I tell you exactly how I felt. I tell you exactly what I weighed on what day, and I even show you how I manipulate some of the nutrients, some of the protein, the carbs, the sodium levels, the water, the hydration. There's a lot in there. I also talk a little bit about goal setting in 3 weeks of Shredded, how to stick to it. Because a lot of people, we all know, maybe it is 3 weeks of Shredded or maybe it's another program. There's ways to lose weight that we all know about, but for some reason, we don't do it. At times, we don't do it. Why don't we do it? I just can't stick to it. I fell off. I cheated. I did this. I did that. Well, in 3 weeks to Shredded, I found it hopefully useful to include something about goal setting, and I cover that, and I get a lot of good feedback on that, that part really helped tie the book in for everybody else. And when I say book, this is a 50-page manual, I like to call it. It's short, it's sweet, it's very specific. I call it a treasure map. It shows you exactly what you need to do with not that much fanfare. You follow it through, you're going to see amazing results. If not, well, that's up to you. It doesn't have to be a 300-page book in order to get the results. It's very simple. You can start it immediately. Cover to cover, and you can start today. You don't have to take 3 weeks to read the darn thing. You can start today and do it. And it's not just for guys. There's women. Now, I think more women buy 3 weeks to Shredded, getting ready for bikini season or getting ready for wedding, getting ready for vacation, or just because they're tired of not feeling amazing. On my Twitter stream, just check my favorites on my Twitter stream, at The Dolce Diet. You're going to just be overwhelmed with how many positive endorsements there are from regular people all around the world. Now, 3 weeks of Shredded, I'm getting long-winded on this now. I just want to share with you. It's sold in over 120 countries. Absolutely amazing. We don't market the darn thing. It's been sold through word of mouth, and that's the reason why, because it freaking works. I wrote 3 Weeks to Shredded in 2007. Well, this is 2013. It's 6 years later, and you better believe the principles behind 3 Weeks to Shredded have evolved in the last 6 years. So I'm going to bring you guys up to date now with the newest techniques, the newest recipes. I'm doing so much stuff now. So much stuff now. Just think, if you were in college for 4 years and spent another 2 years, you'd have your master's, you'd be a doctor, you'd be a lawyer, you'd be something. Well, that's what we've been doing here with the 3 Weeks to Shredded plan, as you could see by guys like Vitor, like what he just did on Saturday night, 3 Weeks to Shredded. Johnny Hendrix. Johnny Hendrix followed the old version of 3 Weeks to Shredded almost exactly for his first round knockout over Martin Campman, almost exactly with a few tweaks to suit Johnny's lifestyle and, you know, his supermarket where he is. The revised edition is going to have rehydration, which I don't cover in 3 Weeks to Shredded. I touch on it, but I don't fully cover it. I'm going to fully cover rehydration. I'm also going to talk about same-day weigh-ins in 3 weeks, in the revised 3 Weeks to Shredded. So we're going to expand it now from that manual to more of a book, probably going to try and get it up to 200 pages or so. And again, just give you straight content, not waste your time, not make it too fluffy, not bore you with definitions and you know, graphs with numbers and breakdowns. That doesn't work for me. I don't like that stuff. I'm just going to give you the ways to do it, and feel free to research every aspect of it on your own. I'm going to give you here's the treasure map, you know, now go in and fill in the blanks from there. And yes, it will be on iTunes. It will be on Kindle. It will be everywhere. It'll be a hardcover, or not a hardcover, it'll be a paperback book, and it'll also be an ebook everywhere. You know, but that's coming out soon. And if we were hoping to release it in the fall, early winter, like November, December, we were hoping to release it. But darn, my schedule's just been so busy that I haven't been able to give it the proper time. And we're not going to release something to you guys if it's not perfect. If I don't 100% stand behind every aspect of it, and I'm a perfectionist, you know, I've probably got OCC, OCD, ADD.
All of those.
I'm very, very, very meticulous, and that's what's holding. So I've held it off, and hopefully, you know, I got a little bit of time now that we're gonna finish. We're gonna tighten it up. We're gonna get it out definitely in time for the summer. Definitely in time for bikini season, beach season. We're gonna get it out.
All right. Next question is from Rob Lumsden. Hey, Mike, what's the better option, gluten-free white bread or a sprouted grain bread like Ezekiel or Silver Hills? Are you not getting better carbs from the sprouted grain bread?
What's up, Rob? Yes, the sprouted grain bread all day, every day. The Ezekiel bread, that's the brand that I really like because it's available here. It's available in most places. Ezekiel bread is awesome. It's a sprouted grain bread. Now, the gluten-free bread, that's okay also. You don't have to have celiac disease. You don't have to have a gluten intolerance to eat gluten-free bread. Well, it tastes pretty good. And it's definitely better than a white bread. It's definitely better than an enriched wheat bread. It's better than you know a highly processed traditional bread. But I probably have a gluten-free bread maybe, you know, one in 10 times, one in 20 times more likely. I can't remember the last time I've had it, but I'll go through some phases. Gluten-free bread is nice to serve with the power pasta, the champion chili, because we toast it and put a little bit of a hemp oil or flax oil on it with a little bit of a roasted garlic, and it just tastes amazing, where the Ezekiel bread tastes a little bit more – definitely tastes a little bit more like a sandwich bread, where the gluten-free bread actually tastes a little bit more like an Italian bread or a semolina bread. So that's more for presentation. And nutrient-wise, you can't beat the sprouted grains.
All right, next question is from Juan Zuniga. What is the best non-animal-based protein to use for shakes, like rice or hemp maybe?
Yeah, Juan, it's hemp. Brown rice protein, that's good also. But right now I'm on a big hemp kick, because hemp, it's not just the protein you get with hemp. You get lots of other vital nutrients with hemp, specifically the essential fats, which is very important to get from hemp. Hemp, you can actually get that near live, you can get it raw, which is almost impossible to get with the brown rice protein, with the rice protein, because that's going to come, you know, powdered and processed. It's still really good, and there are joint products that have like some hemp protein, some brown rice protein, and just different other protein variants. But the hemp, I like, you know, hemp seeds, hemp hearts, because you can mix it to food. So I don't look at hemp as a protein powder, a protein supplement. I think of it as an earth-grown nutrient, a whole food that I add into my diet. I mix it into my cereals. I put it on top of Greek yogurt every so often. I'll mix some almond milk into it, a little touch of honey. I'll mix it with raisins by itself. It's delicious. Chop it up in the nuts with trail mix. So you can add it to everything. Sprinkle it on salads, every salad. All my salads, they have some hemp on it. They have some chia seeds on it. What else? Hemp chia seeds, sometimes there'll be flax in there, maybe coconut, get some raw coconut slices, put that in your salad, it's delicious. There you go. And Q&A, let's slow that down a little bit. I'm getting a little crazy, a little off-winded. Now, getting back, I was in Brazil, and I missed. You want to watch football in Brazil, you are watching soccer. That's what you call it in the United States. So the NFL was not on. In Brazil, where we were, and lots of the guys were freaking out. You know, I'm a football fan, but I'm not a football follower. So the AFC, NFC playoffs were this Sunday. Who? The Bob. The Bob is here. The Bob is here. Quiet. Home quiet, Bob. June. June Hanawa said, tell Bob to speak up unless he wants to, or unless he's silent, Bob. Something along those lines. What's up, June? This weekend football. What's up? Who was playing?
The Baltimore Ravens and the England Patriots, as well as the San Francisco 49ers and Atlanta Falcons.
Who won?
The Baltimore Ravens versus the San Francisco 49ers in the Super Bowl.
That's who it is?
That's who it is.
Ravens versus 49ers. Now, Ravens versus the 49ers, we spoke about Ray Lewis. Sorry, guys, I'm mumbling. I'm talking fast. I got some coffee in me. Ray Lewis, he is retiring this season, right?
He is retiring.
How long has he been in the league?
Since like 96, I believe.
So it was like
looking that up right now.
14 years, 16 years. So he's been in the league a long time. He had some trouble. He had a murder allegation cast against him a few years back, maybe a decade or so ago. Past that, and he's here playing in the Super Bowl. He's retiring. So Ray Lewis has actually become a warm story, a heartfelt story. He's getting a lot of media for his story, and everybody wants to see Ray get in there and get a Super Bowl victory. And it's an interesting topic because not too long ago, Ray Lewis was, he was infamous in the world. He was all over the media for the bad things. He was the bad guy. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Gossip reports of the paparazzi, they're taking photos of him, as if he's the mean, nasty, murderer, dare I say. It's kind of the way he was being portrayed. But now he's being portrayed as an American icon. I think that's very interesting. Now, is it a good thing?
I think it's possible. America's all about second chances, and I feel that Ray's getting his second chance through the grace of God, as he would put it. He's been very religious this past season and seasons before, so I think he's trying to align himself with somebody above, maybe, trying to make him spirits better about the situation. I don't really know, but...
Has he truly changed his lifestyle?
Was he truly guilty? I mean, if the guy's not in prison, is he guilty of something?
What was the case? What was the story? I remember basics.
It was like 2000. He was at a bar. And a fight broke out with him and two of his friends, and two people got killed.
Fist
fight. It was basically two groups of people beefing with the other ones. And Ray's side kind of got the better of it, I guess you can say, with the other groups. Two people dying in the other group. And
two people. So Ray and his buddy won the fight, let's say. There was knives. Ooh.
So it's the way the story is put out there, it seems like there was one guy got punched in the face. A brawl broke out, and then two guys ended up stabbed, and Ray Lewis and two of his friends were out the back door in a limo, speeding away. And
so,
all the evidence was as if Ray was the main guy involved with the. This is alleged, of course.
Alleged. So all I get you. So the story was spun that Ray was the culprit.
Yeah, the bad guy.
But
the guy who committed it.
The court found Ray not guilty based upon evidence. There we go. Okay, so, and there we go. America, right?
Well, although he did wind up paying off the two families with out-of-court settlements.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, how much do we know how much that was? That's usually locked.
Undisclosed settlements.
So he was found not guilty, but he paid off
the civil suit?
The family of the victims. That's interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that. But that doesn't mean he's guilty. He was found not guilty, so he's not guilty. He's not guilty. Maybe he's just a nice guy. And we talked about his salary.
He got 12 months probation is what he got.
12 months probation, probably for something fight related, or, you know, we don't know the charges, so we're not being specific here. Don't take what we're saying as gospel, but we're talking about some of the hearsay that was following him at this time, and this is what I'm talking about. So 2000 or so, there was this hearsay. There's the big stories about him and just what a bad guy, and everybody hated Ray Lewis, kind of like Michael Vick. Let's say, with the whole pit bull issues and Michael Vick, I'm not a fan. Anyway, but that's beside the point. But now here Ray Lewis is, and he's, you know, an icon. He's a legend, and a lot of people are pulling for the Ravens now to win because Ray Lewis is on the team, and they want to see him go out well. And I like what you said, that America is about second chances, and we all mess up, we all do things, and we are. All allowed and able to vindicate ourselves and to work past it. It doesn't make what we do wrong go away, but it certainly allows us to move on and become better people. And I think that's very important. So using Ray Lewis, you know, kind of as that example, I think that is – it's cool. It's interesting, you know, and that is America. Here we go. He could, you know, he could be locked away in a jail, and here he is about to be, you know, playing for the Super Bowl, could be a Super Bowl champion, multimillionaire, never has to work again. And then maybe that is through God's grace, his God's grace, whoever that may be. And maybe that's interesting. The coaches, so I think this is an interesting story also. It's a Harbaugh?
Harbaugh. The Harbaugh Bowl, they're calling it.
The Harbaugh Bowl, because
– they're brothers, and they're coaching against each other.
So the coach of the Ravens and the coach of the 49ers –
brothers.
Our brothers.
Yep.
And they're coaching against each other in the Super Bowl. Is this the first time ever brothers have coached against each other?
Yeah.
If we coached against each other, who would win?
Of course, I would.
Ah. Well, it depends on the sport. No, that's not true.
Good question.
If it was women's ballet, you would probably win.
Ah, you might have the edge in that one. I'm not too sure.
You didn't you do that as a kid? I was going to say you watch a lot of it, but that's not a –
judging by your Gundam style, though, I think you might have the edge in that.
My Gundam style. That's right. That's my thing. Cool. All right. So Q&A. Let's get something else. And so you guys know, so you can picture it, you can check on my Instagram, at the Dolce Diet. You can see some photos of my dog Zoe, our 3-year-old American Pit Bull Rescue. Well, she's in the chair right behind me. She insists on helping us work. So we have these big office chairs so Zoe can jump in and sit. So – she's sitting behind me. I have about 6 inches of office chair, and Zoe has, you know, the other 18 or so inches of the seat. And that's what I'm dealing with right now while doing this podcast and about to hit up your Q&A.
All right. This next question is from Mark Stevens. Hi, Mr. Dolce. Love what you're doing. Huge fan. If I do your push workout on Monday and Wednesday and your pull on Tuesday and Thursday, what is something to do on Fridays? I'm looking to stay lean, but put on some extra muscle. Thank you.
All right, Neil?
Mark.
I'm sorry. Lots of content because I do my show prep. Remember episode 2? My show prep. I'm surrounded by papers. But Mark, your question. So you're doing now this is from the Living Lean book, everybody that doesn't know. In the Living Lean book, I have a bunch of programs, strength and conditioning programs, you know, fat loss programs, you know, summer shape up type programs, more cosmetic programs, or very specific athlete performance based programs. So Mark is asking about the push pull system, which I have built in the Living Lean book. He does that, the push on Monday and Thursday, and then he does the pull on Tuesday and Friday. He's asking, what should he do on Wednesday and Saturday? Well, that depends on you. What are your goals? I would like you to do something a little bit different as far as get out of the gym and move your body in a functional manner. Earlier I said, you know, run, skate, cycle, swim, play basketball, play soccer, do something like that. Do something active. You can do intervals. I mean, if you're an athlete or you want to really get that good fat loss, I have the Fighter's Treadmill workout in the Living Lean book. It's a great program. You know what? Let me flip to that right now. Where is that? Got the Living Lean book in front of me. And there's a bunch of strength workouts in there also. All right, here we go. Fighter's Treadmill workout. All right. So in the Fighter's Treadmill workout, it's 3 rounds. It's easy. You're done in, what, 5, 10, 15, 20? You're done in 25 minutes, but it is amazing. It'll help you get ready for a UFC fight, or it'll help you shed body fat.
It's intervals where round one, round two, round three, what we do, we have a hard minute and then we have a less hard minute. Depending on your level, because I have a beginner's treadmill workout in here, a high-intensity interval workout, and also this fighter's treadmill workout that I'm talking about. But we mimic your energy output on the treadmill that an athlete, an MMA athlete, would feel in a fight. This also is tremendous at losing body fat and increasing your cardiovascular capacity. So that's what I would suggest you do, Mark, on Wednesday or Saturday. And on the other days, when I would really like you to do something fun, something athletic, something outdoors. It could be as simple as going to the park with your family and throwing a ball around or jogging on the beach or, you know, doing anything different, physical, functional. I really want functional because just think, you know, as human beings, we need to be functional, not just picking up weights in the gym and not just running along a treadmill. We need to have function also with the improvements that we add to our body. Give me another one.
Oh, I'm slacking.
Get Brandy here.
I'm slacking. I was surfing the net.
What were you?
I was looking at Michelle Obama's inaugural gown, and I like how she uses American designers. I can't help it.
There you go. See what I'm dealing with over here? Sorry. Everybody. Jesus.
Sorry. Okay. All right, here. Next question is from Alex the Great.
Alex Tarian. What's up, brother?
Oh, you know his last name.
I do, yeah. Alex down in Florida. I know what's up. My boy, Alex, he's awesome. Trains his ass off. He lives the right lifestyle. He's always working and tweaking his diet, his training system. Alex is the man.
All right. Well, his question is, I recently read a study about a group who had carbs and some protein for breakfast versus those who had protein and fats.
Yep.
The carb group lost more weight overall, including muscle mass due to insulin response. And then the protein group, he says, lost half as much weight, but almost strictly body fat. He says it's a lot like living lean versus 3 weeks of shredded. So no breakfast bowl when trying to lower body fat.
So I know what you're talking about, Alex, and there's a lot of ifs in that question. Now, what if you're eating no carbs the rest of the day also? What if you eat the breakfast bowl and then you don't eat any carbs? What if you're eating the high protein, high fat and you don't eat any carbs? What if your nutrient and your calorie load is high? What if it's low? What if you're training high intensity? What if you're a marathon runner? So there's a lot of ifs that go with that question. You guys know almost all of my athletes eat the breakfast bowl every morning. Vitor Belfort ate the breakfast bowl from Living Lean, from the Living Lean cookbook, exactly as it's written, every single morning for this fight. Every morning on the lead up, even on the day before weigh-ins, he ate the breakfast bowl. Now, look at the photos. Go to my Facebook page. Go anywhere and look at the photos of Vitor Belfort on the scale. He looks absolutely amazing, like an anatomy chart. Did he lose muscle mass? No. Did he lose strength or speed? No. Did he lose body fat? Hell yeah. Did he feel amazing? Absolutely. Vitor ate the breakfast bowl every morning. So I know there's a study that you're talking about. Well, look at my study. You can actually watch my study, step on the scale live. You can watch him fight live. That's my study. Those are the results. And then scientific method, let's observe the results. Well, feel free to do it. You know, I'm not hiding this. It's not secret. I'm not, you know, performing this in a lab, writing a paper about it and telling you, hey, this is what happened under these circumstances. I'm telling you real life. Here's a world-class athlete that ate the breakfast bowl every morning. And look at him. Look at the way he looks. Look at the way he performs. So now, will you lose body fat doing, eating high fat, high protein? Yeah, you will. But for how long? Bodies, we humans, we're not made to live on protein and fat alone. We need carbohydrates from multiple sources. We need those carbohydrates. We run on glycogen. Our body needs that. And also, it tastes good. It adds a social and emotional component that's very important. Typically carbohydrates contain fiber, high fiber, different types of fiber. They certainly contain different types of nutrients that are essential that protein and fat-containing products don't have. So should you eat the breakfast bowl? You know, I'd say absolutely yes. Now, do you have to? Absolutely not. You know, and that's the true answer. So now you know what I feel about it. Hopefully I gave you a very specific example to visually look at and understand. Well, that's my experiment. Look at Vitor.
Well, speaking of Vitor, our next question is about him from Joel Cloutier. I hope I'm saying that right. Hey, Mike, what was Vitor drinking after weigh-ins?
Yep.
Yeah, he said he saw one of his coaches with some orange liquid in a big water bottle.
So what Vitor was drinking, he was drinking a specially made cocktail by myself. It was my recipe, post weigh-in rehydration recipe, and it was all natural. All natural. Now, a lot of guys, and we saw a bunch of them backstage, they drink Gatorade, they drink, you know, certain electrolyte replacement compounds, they drink, you know, was it Pedialyte is another popular one. That is all processed garbage, in my opinion. My athletes, again, consume earth-grown nutrients, real foods, raw foods, live foods. So Vitor was drinking a juice cocktail of real live juice inducted into or introduced into his body for efficient absorption. The body, in my theory, my philosophy, the body will more readily accept earth-grown nutrients than it will chemical-made, processed, or artificially enhanced compounds. The body intuitively reacts that this way. And that's my thought. There's a lot of science out there that certainly points to it. That's my experience also. With earth-grown nutrients, live nutrients, you get all the good and none of the bad. With the processed products, you get all of the good and some of the bad. Does that make sense? So I believe the body more readily adapts to it or absorbs it and is able to utilize it. I think it gives you more of that life essence. And again, I'll point to my athletes. There's a lot of other guys that take other products, you know, chemically enhanced products. My athletes do not. Now look at the way my athletes compete. Look at their health. I mean, talk to their doctors and look at their blood work and just see how excellent, how the type of health levels that they're at. I think that's very important. So it's not just getting them across the athletic finish line. It's also keeping them healthy along the way. The processed drinks can get them across that athletic finish line well, very well, or not so well, but there's going to be baggage attached to it that will not be attached to earth-grown nutrients. So what the drink was specifically, it was purified water. It was sea salt. It was a fruit juice cocktail that was combined in a ratio that Vitor had used previously and had used during his training camp. Vitor takes very specific raw fruit juices and vegetable juices that we create throughout his training camp to make sure we're giving him the essential nutrients he needs at that time, at that phase of training. So his and each juice, each cocktail, each recipe is specific to the athlete, the type of fat that they need, the type of, you know, the ratio of the fat to the sugar and all these things. So Vitor's was specific to himself, but the same concept applies for everybody. What Vitor drinks is the same as what Tiago drinks. The ratio is typically different, or, you know, what Johnny Hendricks would drink. You'll see I give it to all my guys, and it's usually tinged with some sort of fruit color you may or may not be able to see. There's always sea salt in there. There's always form of – I like to put honey in there because it's easy to get around the world, and that gives it that little sugar dip. Boom, brain turns on, and then we have the essential fruit juice in there, and it's not the raw bulk yet. It's not the fiber. It's the juice. We squeeze the juice and slowly get it into the body, slowly let the digestive system start to work because they're dehydrated. At that point, Vitor is dehydrated. And when he actually gets off the scale, you'll see it's not – the juice it's not orange. It's just very lightly tinted. It looks – and it's a clear water bottle that he's actually drinking. And there's a slight tinge. I think it looks more gray than orange. I don't know where the orange comes from. But there are oranges in there. There are lemons in there. There is limes in there. There is beet in there. There is carrot in there. There is a whole bunch of other nutrients, the juice of it in there. And it's in his gown when he goes backstage. And it's in the cooler when he starts to eat more solid foods. And it's in his salad later on that night when he has a much bigger meal. And it's part of his breakfast the next day. Again, it's earth-grown nutrient-specific ratios. And again, this is a very long-winded way of, again, reinforcing the fact that it's earth-grown nutrients. I would rather you squeeze a lemon into a bottle with a little pinch of salt and a dab of honey than ever drink a Pedialyte or a Gatorade when you step off the stage in a dehydrated state for a athletic competition when you're trying to rehydrate.
All right.
There we go.
Speaking of athletic competition.
Uh-oh.
You ready? All right. Kyle Fleming says, hey, Mike, what do you think about weigh-ins on the day of competition, like – BJJ tournaments, and what would you recommend for that, considering you only have a few hours to rehydrate?
If you're competing in a same-day tournament, you got to get your weight down earlier, and you have to compete closer to your natural weight. You cannot lose the same amount of weight as you would if you had a 24-hour weigh-in because you have that 24 hours to rehydrate. Now, this is what goes on with a lot of wrestlers. A lot of wrestlers weigh in, and they're competing within 1 to 3 hours after they step on the scale. Wrestlers have to compete much closer to their natural body weight. Otherwise, they're not going to perform. And what's the point of competing if you're going to get your ass kicked and you're going to be unhealthy? So there's no point to it. Same day weighing, you have to compete closer to your body weight. Now, how do you compete at at as low body weight as possible and still be healthy, well, you make sure when you weigh in, you're empty. You don't have any digested food matter or impacted food matter sitting inside your body. You are 100% empty, so that means you have to change your diet in the weeks before you step on the scale so you peak perfectly. You have high levels of energy. You have even blood sugar. You're fully hydrated. And you're light, you're lean, you are sharp, you are ready to go because you don't have any time to rehydrate afterwards and regain any of the strength. So you have to be ready. All right, next question.
All right, this one's from Edwin Kudadian. Going shopping for ingredients to your meals, just wondering what I should stock up on that may come across a lot.
So, Edwin, have you read Living Lean yet? Because if you have, you'll notice in Living Lean we have a complete grocery list that tells you. So what can I tell you here to stock up on? Earth-grown nutrients. That's the goal. That's what you should have in your house. What specifically should I tell you? That would be an entire podcast unto itself. That's why I wrote Living Lean. So you know exactly what you should have, what you can buy. And I tell you exactly what to do to clear out your kitchen, to go through your kitchen and decide, should you be keeping this? What should I switch this out with? And the entire list is in there. And we also have recipes, 50 recipes in Living Lean, roughly based on the grocery list. So if you have those nutrients in your house, if you have those groceries in your house, then you can make every recipe in Living Lean or the Living Lean cookbook. I mean, it's pretty simple. Can I tell you it? I mean, just the basics. You want to have a crap load of water. You want to have lots of green vegetables. You have lots of fresh fruit. You want to have whole grains. You want to have lean proteins. Multicolored vegetables, like tomatoes and carrots and eggplant, going to the fruits, you want different types of berries and melons, apples and pears and oranges, oh my, all that good stuff. I mean, it should be alive and it should be healthy and it should be rough. Follow the Earth Grow Nutrient Profile or principle and you'll be pretty good. Or download Living Lean. It's $9.99 on Kindle or iTunes, or you can buy the paperback off the Amazon. And it's all outlined. It's broken down in there for you. Another question.
All right. Zach Sherman wants to know, I've noticed you've become a big advocate for grapes now, especially red grapes. What's the reason for that and why red over other colors? And does that apply to other foods as well, such as red kale?
Zach Sherman, my buddy, everybody. Zach Sherman, he's also our graphic designer. Some of the great things that you see on thedolcediet.com or themikedolceshow.com or mydolcediet.com, the t-shirts, the corporate shirts that we're coming out with. Zach Sherman, he's been a big part. The covers of our books, of our products. June Hanawa did the initial Living Lean cover. June! Again. Did the initial Living Lean cover, and Zach has done a lot of other work for us. And that's – give Zach a little shout. Check him out. You guys are interested in a graphic designer, Zach Sherman Arts. They are the best. And red grapes. So I've always been an advocate of red grapes. Now, grapes, nutrient-wise, they're pretty darn similar. I mean, red, green, black grapes, there's different types of grapes. They're all very, very similar. I choose red grapes because I've found with myself and most people that there's slightly less digestive discomfort if you eat too many red grapes. If you have kind of a soft stomach or if you overeat grapes, you might feel a little woozy. They might not digest well. They're very high in sugar, a good healthy sugar, but just the digestion gets people a little bit in different ways, and we don't want to risk that. Now, I mean, I'll eat green grapes all day, especially when they're fresh. Red grapes, though, I find to be a little bit better. And there's I forget the name specifically, and I'll look this up. I'll get it back to you. But there's a nutrient inside the skin of a red grape that actually increases the antioxidant capacity or the antioxidant content of the red grapes just a little bit over the green grapes. So I kind of skew a little bit more towards red. I mean, that's just a very simple factoid right there. Because, green grapes, again, are excellent. Why do I want the red more? It comes down to digestion. I find they digest just a little bit better. That's it. Simple. And freeze them, everybody. A little tip. Freeze. Take a little Ziploc baggie of red grapes. Freeze them and try that as a dessert. You have an ice cream crave? Freeze some red grapes and eat those at night before bed. Watch that crave go away. You will crave the red grapes. They are absolutely delicious. Kids, parents, cheap, healthy, safe snacks, non-messy, frozen red grapes. Your kids will freaking love them. It's like a gobstopper at first, but immediately it melts down and becomes a typical grape pretty fast, and it's a fun food. So kids really love them. I absolutely love them, and it's like little health pills that you can have your family eating.
All right, next question is from Ulysses Gomez.
Ulysses Gomez, UFC veteran. What's up, my man?
He wants to know how you combat jet lag.
That is a great question. And actually, jet lag is a huge issue within the sport of MMA, Ulysses, as you know, because these guys, they travel. They're like paid assassins. They get sent a contract to fly across the world and take out another man. A specified time at a specified place. That's pretty damn gangster. But usually the guy whose hometown it is has the advantage because he doesn't have to endure travel. Great time to ask the question because I just got back from Brazil with Vitor Belfort and Nick Lentz. Nick Lentz did his training camp, as did actually Vitor and Nick Lentz, both did their training camps in Florida, which is 3 hours behind time than Brazil. 3 hours behind is substantial. Especially when you're waking up at a specific time, you have to compete, you're cutting weight, you're doing, it was a 14, 15-hour trip to travel down there. CJ Keith, who I actually saw him at the airport, he was on one of the connecting flights with me. He actually came from L.A., which is 6 hours behind Brazil. He said he had a terrible time adjusting. CJ Keith said he was getting 2 hours of sleep per night, and he was waking up, he was just laying in bed, and he would just get up. When the sun came out, maybe, 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning, and he'd start cutting weight. He'd start working out because he was going crazy. He couldn't adjust. His body couldn't adjust. And he said that that may have adversely affected his performance. And I agree. It definitely adversely affected his performance and most everybody else in that situation. Now, what did I do with Nick specifically? With Nick, we made sure his training time in America was in close proximity to when he would actually be competing. So his body was on that natural clock. Now, Nick traveled. It was, I think he came from Florida. It was a little bit less time than me, but let's say it was 12 hours. I think he had a connection. So a 12-hour flight to get to Brazil, 3 hours ahead. He landed, I think, 10 o'clock in the morning, and the goal was let's get outside. Let's not go to bed. We went back to the hotel. We dropped off our equipment. We went outside. We got some sunshine. We walked around the city. We got a coffee. We let our body adjust to the sunshine so our body knew that it was time to be awake. And when the sun went down, then we actually went down with the sun. We slowed down our lifestyle. We allowed ourselves to transition into the natural style, and it worked. We made sure we woke up, at 10 o'clock every day, so we had a very specific routine. Routine is very important, Ulysses. When you travel, you want to get that routine down. You also want to get outside. Now, Joe Rogan talked about this quite a bit. When he travels, he actually goes outside. He gets some sunshine, and he was talking about walking around. I forget who his guest was. I listen to all Rogan's podcasts. He's the man. He's awesome. And he was talking about going outside and actually walking on grass, and he was talking about the science behind that. That actually is a very well-known and used therapy to overcome jet lag. Now, I didn't know that. I didn't try to walk around in the grass. What we did is we got outside, and we got the sunshine, and we made sure that we breathed the air, and we let our body get in rhythm. When Thiago Alves fought Martin Kampmann on the other side of the world in Australia, I forget what that time difference was, but it was excessive. I think it was 8 hours or so. We did the same thing. We landed early in the morning in Australia. We dropped off our gear. We got our sunglasses and tank tops, and we drove down to the beach. We got some water. We got some coffees. We walked around the beach. We put our feet in the water. We absorbed the sunshine. We stayed active. We didn't work hard. We didn't work out on that day because our body's stressed out. I mean, sitting in a chair for that long, this is when you can actually get hurt. You're sore. You're tight. You're stiff. You might be misaligned. You're not malnourished, but your nutrition is off. You're the pressurized cabin. Your digestive system is off. You have all this recirculated air pumping through your body. So we wanted to make sure we overcome that as we slowly picked up our activity level. So with Thiago and his coach, Catel Cubas, we just hung out at the beach all day. We stayed active in the sunshine. We got on that clock, and we fell asleep again when the sun went down. So that's one way to do it. Now, what I tell everybody, and this is important, this is a little tip. I'm going to let you guys in on a secret. When you travel, I have my athletes drink 16 ounces of water for every hour, door to door. When they leave their house, because I live 15 minutes from the Las Vegas airport. Other guys, other people, other of you, you might live 2 hours. When I lived in New Jersey, I didn't live that far from that many miles, maybe 40 or 50 miles from the airport. But certain days, it's a metropolitan area, the tri-state area, it would take 2 hours to get from Belmar, New Jersey to the Newark airport. Well, every hour that I was traveling, every hour that you travel, I strongly suggest you drink 16 ounces of water. And I suggest you get an aisle seat on your flight because, yes, you will be getting up. Yes, you will be using the bathroom, but you will be purifying your system. You're keeping your body actively engaged. You'll be keeping your digestive system running. You'll be hydrated, which is very important. This makes that transition much easier. Now, athletes, if you're cutting weight, it's very important because your body will hold, will retain water when you fly, when you travel. You're packing yourself into a steel tube, getting thrust 6 miles, 10 miles above the surface of the earth and hurtling through the air at 500 miles an hour. There are metabolic issues happening that we don't even, that we're not even aware of, I believe, at that level. And this causes all sorts of problems, all sorts of alarms to go off, and you can feel, and this is part of what jet lag is, your body is just so knocked out of sorts, knocked out of balance, and it takes time to regain that balance. Being adequately hydrated certainly helps that process. If you're dehydrated when you're sitting in bed, jacks you up. Now, if you're flying across the world, that really, really, really screws you up. Super hydration, 6 ounces of water for every hour that you travel door to door. All my guys feel amazing as a result of that. So, That's big. And then Ulysses, get outside when you first get there. Resist the urge. A lot of people, oh, I'm so tired. They go to sleep early in the middle of the day. They take a nap. Well, now it's hard to fall asleep at night. They don't get ample sleep when they do. And they have a hard time waking up at a proper time. They're dragging ass all day. Once you start dragging ass, it's really hard to reverse it. So we want to make sure that right away we are on track and on point. And Ulysses, you're my man. So any questions? You got my cell phone number. Shoot me a text. Shoot me a phone call. But don't give it out.
All right, the next question is from Michael Trento. How do I not fail? I have lost 30 pounds multiple times, but I need to lose 75. I always end up gaining the 30 back plus some. Is it mental or do I need a better support system?
Wow, Michael. First, congratulations on losing 30 pounds. Do not discount that. That is awesome. That is excellent. That should be that should motivate you to keep on going forward. So I don't want you to disregard losing the 30 pounds. You need to lose 75 more. That's a great goal. So systematically, let's plan out a goal. This is an important way to not fail. We need to set goals. You want a short-term goal. You want a long-term goal. So set that long-term goal. 75 pounds, let's give you 18 months roughly. So how many pounds is that a month? There's 18 months. What's 3 times 18 and 3 times 20? So if it's 4 pounds a month, that's 40. Sorry, guys, 40 and 16, 32. So it's about 4 pounds a month. That's going to be about a pound a week for the next 18 months. I think that is attainable if you have the weight to lose. And I'm assuming that you do have this weight to lose to fall into a healthy lean mass ratio. So at a very conservative estimate of 1 pound per week, and the average on a weight loss diet is typically 2 pounds. A lot of people following my programs lose more than 2 pounds, and you can see that. You look at my Facebook testimonials or my Twitter testimonials. 1 pound a week, that's going to be our goal. Now, how do we lose 1 pound a week? We have our long-term goal. 18 months is the 75 pounds, broken down 1 pound a week. So now we have a short-term goal. My goal is to lose 4 pounds a month. To lose 1 pound a week. How do I lose that 1 pound a week? Well, we don't say I need to lose, 0.2 pounds per day. I'm going to say I need to develop action steps to lose that 1 pound a week. What do I need to do? I need to increase my water intake. I need to be adequately hydrated. That's very important. Are you drinking? I'm 200 pounds. I'm 195, 198 pounds at 7% body fat right now. I drink 2 gallons of water per day every single day and sometimes more than that. My wife, Brandy, is 125 pounds. She drinks a gallon of water every single day. She's a girl. She's a thin, athletic, petite girl. A gallon of water every day. So for you guys out there that think a gallon of water is a lot, well, depends on your perspective, I think we should say. It depends on your need. I feel amazing. She feels amazing. She looks amazing. It's very important. How much water do you drink a day, Bob?
Probably 2 gallons.
Bob drinks probably two and a half gallons, and he's a slug. He drinks it down all day long, and he's 170 pounds or so. So I'm about 68 and a half. So I'm we're the same height roughly. He's 30 pounds less, and he's drinking two and a half gallons a day easily. If I drink less, and I'm talking about my own family because I can factually talk about them and I know the ins and outs, this is what these people are drinking. Different body types, different goals, different activity levels, different genders, different metabolisms. Everything is absolutely different, but the hydration is very high. So action step is increase your water intake. It's very important. Now what? Dolce diet principles. I have to eat earth-grown nutrients at even intervals, which is every 2 to 4 hours. And I'm going to base it on what I just did and what I'm about to do. That's absolutely important. I'm going to eat until I'm satisfied, and I'm not going to eat until I'm full. If you feel full after a meal, well, you messed up. Let's stop messing up. Your question is, you fail. How do you not fail? We set a goal, long-term goal. Then we have short-term goals. We break those short-term goals down into action steps. It's like the concept that, you know, you want to earn, you want to save your money. Well, don't count on the big dollars. You count on your cents. Pay attention to the cents. And then once you pay attention, you save your cents, well, then you have dollars. Once you save those dollars, then you have tens of dollars and hundreds of dollars and thousands of dollars and millions of dollars. But it all starts with the very simple. And those are the action steps, the small things I want you to pay attention to. So you have water in your house. You have the earth-grown nutrients in your house. That's all you're consuming. If you're only eating earth-grown nutrients, I don't care what the ratio is out of the gate. I don't care what your carbohydrate, your protein, your fat intake is out of the gate if you're only eating earth-grown nutrients, because we can get it more specific down the road. You're eating earth-grown nutrients now. Now you're taking out all the toxins. You're taking out all the chemicals. You're taking out all the garbage. Now your body's able to digest, absorb, utilize these foods better than a lot of the other chemicals that are disrupting your digestion that you may be taking in now. And I'm assuming if you're 100 pounds overweight, well, you haven't been living on earth-grown nutrients for a little while and possibly for a very long while. So now we're back on the earth-grown nutrients. We have all the chemicals out of our body. So now our body starts to work the way it was intended to, the way it was designed to, the way it naturally did. Definitely go to your doctor, speak with your doctor. I recommend every athlete, every person I talk to, I do this myself. I get 4 blood tests a year minimum. I make sure I stay on top of this. I'm very specific. Definitely work with your doctor on your lifestyle program, on your nutrition program. Analyze your blood test. Analyze these results. See if you're lacking anything. See if you have any tendencies, any health issues, any conditions, because these can go into your issues. Maybe your thyroid's a little slow. Maybe it's not. Maybe you're insulin sensitive. Maybe you're not. Maybe you have some sort of food allergy, some sort of digestive issue. Maybe you're some sort of nutrient deficient, iron deficient. Maybe not. It's good to know that. We need to know that as we develop these eating programs, and these should be part of your initial action steps. And then to get more specific, you want to exercise. You want to exercise 30 minutes a day, every day, 5 days a week, 6 days a week, 7 days a week. Now, hopefully, all day should be exercising. We should be moving your body. I do try and take the stairs. I do park farther than the first spot. Unless I'm dressed up, I'm going out to dinner, then that's a little different. In my everyday life, I try and be active. I try and use my body. I try and squat down. I try and lean over. I try and twist. I try and extend. I try and reach. I try new things. I utilize my body, and I try and increase my utility, my output. These small little things skew me closer towards my intended goal. That's very important, especially in the beginning. Now, you're dissatisfied because you're not losing weight as fast as you can, but are you doing everything in your power to make as much progress as you can? And that's why I add all these little things. Now, of course, you can go to the gym and you can run on the treadmill and you can lift weights for 30, 45, 75 minutes per day. I don't recommend exercising more than 75 minutes at a clip. That's with your warm-up, with your cool-down, so you can be efficient, you can be specific, unless it's a long endurance training system. That's something that's different, marathoning and, you know, what have you. So now we're exercising. We're eating earth-grown nutrients. We're eating at even intervals, so we're never getting hungry, but we're never actually full. Our metabolism's moving. Our body's working. And once we've achieved this point, now we can start skewing. We can start adding, well, you know, I want to gain more muscle. I'm going to eat a little bit more protein so I can increase the muscle gain. I want to burn body fat. I do want to be a marathon runner or a cyclist. I'm going to need more carbohydrates. Then we can start to get more specific on your diet. So 75 pounds overweight. You want to set long-term goals, short-term goals, action steps. Now you talk about your support system. Yes, it's very important. But if you don't have people support you, well, fuck them. Pardon my language. It doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is you being accountable to your goals. Support systems are nice. It certainly helps when you have them. But you do not need them because it's up to you if you succeed or fail only. Now, the more you succeed, the more you actually do what you're supposed to do, the more you will inspire the people around you to not only support you, but to join in, because they're going to see you do it. You're going to inspire them. They're going to realize, oh my God, Michael actually made these changes. Michael, the guy that was 100 pounds overweight, has now lost 30 pounds. He's lost 50 pounds. He's exceeded his goal of losing over 100 pounds, and he's not stopping. He's not slowing down. He's not having cheat meals. He's not blowing off steam. He's not going out to the bars and having these big celebrations. He's at the gym today. He's still eating his power pasta or his thoroughbred chicken. Living Lean recipes, by the way. He's still doing all the things that he could because he's still getting better. That's going to inspire the people around you, whether it's your teammates, your coworkers, your children. The barista you see at Starbucks every day. Oh, my God, you look great. Every time I see you, you look better and better and better. You've been coming in here for a year and a half now. I remember the first day you came in here. I don't even recognize you anymore. You want to have dinner sometime? Boom. Maybe that'll motivate you. But whatever your internal motivation is, you have to be accountable to it. And that's how these action steps work. That's how these goals work. Now, if you say, oh, well, I'm going to eat good this meal. But this meal, I was stuck at work. I was in traffic. Well, you know what? You fucked up. And then, you know, it's your problem because you know better. I'm going to, you know, kind of lean on you a little bit here. You know better. I can't do it for you. I've told you everything. I put products out there. There's YouTube videos and blogs and articles and books and all this stuff for you. And it doesn't have to be my stuff. It can be a lot of other people's great stuff. But inside, you know what you have to do. You just have to start doing it. You have to be accountable. It has to be one step at a time, and you keep getting better. Just go through your action steps. Hit that 1 pound a week. It's just 1 pound a week. And you don't have to do everything perfect today, which is very important. You just have to do today something better than you did yesterday. And you're just going to do the same thing tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'm just going to do one thing better than I did yesterday. And I'm going to keep adding just one thing, just 1%. I'm going to keep grinding. I'm going to keep climbing. I'm going to keep, you know, striving to do better, to be better, to gain, to get more. Because you deserve more. Because guess what? You're not going to be here forever. So time is short. Life is short. Get off your ass and freaking do something. It is awesome. I called my book Living Lean for a reason. Living Lean is an amazing way to go through life. Now, you don't have to be at 5% body fat or 10% body fat or even 12% body fat. You just need to be in a healthy range that you are going to live a nice long life and you are going to be happy and comfortable in your own skin and you are going to be highly functional. You can climb the pyramids in Egypt. You can hike any mountain in Oregon. You can swim any river. You can jump any stream. You can do all these great things, and that's what Living Lean is about. You don't want to be stuck on your couch, miserable, stuck in your skin, stuck in a shirt that's too big and pants that are too tight. You don't want to be stuck in that gross, sweaty body. You don't have to be. You can start doing it. You can be better immediately. And that's what it all comes down to, again, those action steps, and that's accountability. So the support system, tell them that's what they're going to do. Write it down in a journal. Put it out there so people know. And your support system can be your haters. You can show your haters up by exceeding their expectations of you. Guess what? Most people don't want to see you succeed, even the people that love you most, because when you succeed, it shines the light on their lack of success in a certain area, their insecurities in a certain area. You're doing it and they're not. And a lot of people, they don't want to see it. In Living Lean, I talk about it's the crabs in the bucket syndrome. For every crab that tries to climb to the very top of that boiling pot and put its little claw over the top and reach and climb itself out, all the clams and the crabs in the bottom are grabbing. You see this every day. They're reaching up. They're grabbing him by the back leg, and they're pulling him down there with them. That's what all societies are like. Very rarely do you find a person that doesn't have that same motivation, and it's not intentional. It's something natural, and it's not against you. It's really it's because most people inside, they're insecure, and they're hurting, and they don't have the confidence, and they don't want to see someone else succeed because, oh, my God, it shines the light on them. So your support system, use that, whether it's positive motivation or negative motivation. Use that motivation to be accountable. Michael, I want you to get back in touch with me every week and tell me at least you lost 1 pound. That's your goal. I want you to tell me every week you lost 1 pound. Coach Mike, I lost another pound this week. I lost another pound. I lost another pound all the way through. And I'll keep talking to you. I'll keep helping you. I'll do my best to point you in the right direction. But, man, you got to keep the action steps going. You got to stick with it. You stick with it, I'll stick with it. I will work as hard as you will for you. You just got to meet my passion. You got to meet my intensity. I'll stay accountable. I'm not going anywhere. So now, Michael, it's up to you. All right, guys. On that note, this is the end of episode 5. Welcome back from Brazil. I'm so happy. Vitor and Nick, Jesus. I mean, what an honor to stand by their sides. What studs. What great guys. What good friends. What amazing world-class athletes. I'm riding high right now. What do I have coming up? This Thursday is the next podcast. Every Monday and Thursday, The Mike Dolce Show on iTunes. We're on Stitcher now. So check us out on Stitcher. Also, themikedolceshow.com. Anywhere you can find a podcast, You should be able to find the Mike Dolce Show. If not, let me know. We're just building. We're trying to get out there as much as possible. If you can't hear us, well, you're listening right now, but maybe it's on a different device that you don't prefer. But whatever your device is, let me know. Post it on our Facebook page, The Dolce Diet, or on my Twitter, at The Dolce Diet. I respond constantly. Remember, on my Twitter, at The Dolce Diet, every Sunday, it's my Sunday Q&A. I get on there and I answer questions all day long. A lot of those questions I'm going to touch on again. If I think it's good, if I think it's not good, but if it's interesting, if I think it can help a lot of people, I'm going to bring it up. A lot of these questions, it's amazing the response you guys have had. By the way, did I talk about being number two? We debuted the Mike Dolce Show, number two behind Julian Michaels' podcast. Thank you, guys. Holy shit. That was crazy. That blew my mind. So, again, thank you, and let's keep it going. You guys seem to care about the topics that we're talking about. I'm going to do my best to bring you real information, factual information. But keep asking me. This will only be good is if we can keep communicating. So whatever you want to hear, if I sound like a dickhead talking about an issue, if you disagree with something, if I didn't explain something properly – let me know, because I want to talk about it with you guys. I learn from you guys. The reason why I do what I do and the reason why I've had the successes I've had is because I learn from every interaction I have. Every athlete I work with, I learn from, I grow from, I evolve from, and I become better, hopefully, for the next one. Every client, every student, every person, every interaction that I come, good, bad, or otherwise, I learn from it, and I try and be better. So hopefully you guys will see that as we go through. Let's keep doing this. This is our show. This is our time. So let's really, you know, let's interact and let's make this thing happen. All right, guys. Remember, don't count calories. Make calories count. Boom.
The Mike Dolce Show.
Cause you can't.